This is DomesticPreparedness.com. Since 1998, Domestic Preparedness has been a source of solutions for the professional preparedness community. Your host today is the managing editor, John Morton.
Domestic Preparedness is with Rear Admiral David Pekoski, the Assistant Commandant of the Coast Guard for Operations, and Rear Admiral Brian Salerno, who is the Assistant Commandant of the Coast Guard for Planning and Policy. When we were with Admiral Allen last year, the Commandant, we focused a lot of our discussion on the lessons learned from operations in Hurricane Katrina. But today we're going to discuss the Coast Guard's strategy for maritime safety, security, and stewardship that was released this winter. We're going to focus primarily on the maritime security piece with the understanding that these three areas, of course, overlap. Among our topics will be enhancements to legal regimes and operational capability. Admiral Pekoski, Admiral Salerno, it's very much of an honor to be with you at the Coast Guard headquarters, and thanks for taking time to talk with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming to Coast Guard headquarters to talk with us.
Well, Admiral Pekoski, let's start with your quick overview of the strategy. It's all hazards, all threat orientation, and what it means for interagency and intergovernmental command and coordination. Those are real key issues for our DOM Prep members.
They're very key issues. Admiral Allen has signed a strategy for the Coast Guard on the 17th of January, so the strategy has been published since you last met with him. As you know, the Coast Guard is a multi-mission military maritime organization. And if you think of the Coast Guard and think of its uniqueness within the United States government, we are the only organization within government that is a safety organization while at the same time being a law enforcement organization, a security organization, a military organization, an environmental response organization, and a regulatory organization. Mm-hmm. And so the title of our strategy is it's the Coast Guard Strategy for Maritime Safety, Security, and Stewardship. And that really encompasses the breadth of the mission responsibilities we have. What the strategy calls for us to do is to really leverage that absolute uniqueness of the Coast Guard as an entity within this government, leverage our international partners. If you think of other countries in the world that are developing navies, most of those navies that they are developing are really more like Coast Guards than the U.S. Navy. And so we want to leverage our aspects of being a multi-mission service with what other countries are developing. The other key part of our strategy is to develop partnerships within the United States at the state, the local level, and with our industry partners. As you know, we have had long-standing and very strong relationships with all three of those entities, and we look to leverage those relationships even more. And so the strategy is very much about emphasizing the very multi-mission nature of the Coast Guard and our relationships with others to jointly accomplish the goals that we've established.
Now, Admiral Salerno, when the strategy speaks of legal regimes, you're primarily referring to the Maritime Transportation and Safety Act, MTSA, is that correct?
We certainly do include the Maritime Transportation Security Act in our concept of regimes, but it's certainly not limited to that. Regimes really encompasses the full range of laws, regulations, treaties, which govern the activities of governments and industry and even citizens who operate in the maritime domain. MTSA, of course, focuses on security. But there are other regimes, such as the Oil Pollution Act of 1990, which focus on environmental responsibilities. Mm-hmm. There are regimes such as the Stafford Act, which govern how the U.S. government responds to disasters of all types, such as Katrina. So there are numerous types of regimes. Taken collectively, they govern how we operate in our environment throughout our strategic roles, which is safety, security, and stewardship.
Uh-huh. Well, Admiral, the strategy says that the Coast Guard is working with DHS and other agencies and maritime stakeholders to strengthen these legal regimes. What exactly are you seeking?
Well, there are some areas that where we need to bolster our regimes. One example is the chemical security regulations, which are being promulgated by the Department of Homeland Security. These are not Coast Guard regulations per se. In fact, they're coming out of the DHS Infrastructure Protection directorate. But there is a connection with MTSA, which you mentioned earlier. Many facilities may be governed by both the new chemical facility regulations and the existing MTSA. So we're working with the department to make sure that those two regimes are harmonized. Another example is some work we're doing with cruise ships. Prior to 9/11, cruise ships were the only category of vessel that were required to have a security plan. Since then, of course, MTSA has come online, and we're now in the process of harmonizing the requirements for cruise ships so that they fully conform with MTSA. For example, we need to improve the methodologies used for screening passengers, screening their luggage. What may be acceptable, for example, on a cruise ship may not look like what's acceptable for an aircraft. So it's very modal specific in terms of cruise ships.
Now, are there any other new security standards that are in development that you'd want to cite?
One major body of regulation standards refers to the Transportation Worker Identification Credential, TWIC. This is an effort that that has TSA in the lead, but with strong cooperation from the Coast Guard. It will require that all people who need unescorted access to a marine facility or to a vessel have a standard national credential based on a background check, and the credential will have a biometric-enabled capability. It is one of the most significant port security enhancements required under the Maritime Transportation Security Act and the Safe Port Act, which was passed last year.
Now, in this segment, I'd like to turn to a discussion on maritime domain awareness. Admiral Salerno, let me start with you. In turning to awareness, something stressed very much in the strategy. Can you tell us what's happening in your maritime domain awareness efforts since we last spoke with Admiral Allen?
Well, since in the last year, the Maritime Domain Awareness Implementation Team has developed a national concept of operations and an investment strategy. And both of those documents have been forwarded to the White House for approval. We're now at the point where we will figure out some of the details between how our Global Maritime Situational Awareness Entity and the Global Maritime Intelligence component will work together, or the details of how they will pull information from various information hubs throughout the government. So overall, these capabilities are being stood up, and progress is being made. Within the Coast Guard, we've done quite a bit with MDA. There's a nationwide AIS system which is being put in place. It's on track. We can now receive automated information signals from ships that are required to have that capability. We can receive that in all of our major ports and along most of our coastlines. And coming soon is a long-range identification and tracking capability. It's an international capability which will be put in place by the end of 2008.
Well, the Coast Guard has defined MDA as situational awareness plus intel for monitoring and detection. Would you elaborate on that current definition for those ashore who may still not be completely familiar with the term?
If I could just add, before Brian answers that question, in terms of maritime domain awareness governance, Rear Admiral Kelly is the Global Maritime Intelligence Integration Lead, Coast Guard Officer, and Rear Admiral Lee Metcalf, a Navy officer, is now the lead for Global Maritime Situational Awareness. Admiral Metcalf just reported into Coast Guard headquarters. He reports direct to the Coast Guard Commandant and the CNO. So the progress we've made is we now have two flag officers in place for both the intelligence and the awareness aspects of overall maritime domain awareness. And so I would expect that over the next year, additional significant progress will be made on this effort.
Excellent. Admiral Salerno.
Just to put this in context, situational awareness is really the broad understanding of the current scene. It's everything that's taking place in the maritime domain. Intelligence can then be added into that broad picture so that you now have not only a view of everything that's going on, but you can also identify targets of interest or persons of interest within that broader context. So it tells you not only what might pose a threat, but also what potential targets may be near those threatening vessels or people.
Admiral Pekoski, enhancing Maritime domain awareness means working with DOD and other agencies, as well as state and locals, the private sector, and the international partners. What would you be seeking here?
We're seeking a number of things. First and foremost, we're seeking unity of effort, because every entity brings their own unique authorities, capabilities, and competencies to the table. And our desire collectively is to leverage that uniqueness for a unity of effort going forward. We're also working very hard in getting the National MDA implementation team up and running at the federal level. The Coast Guard, in particular, is doing, within the Department of Homeland Security, some really excellent work with Customs and Border Protection. I chair with Assistant Commissioner Jay Ahern of Customs and Border Protection, a senior guidance team between the Coast Guard and Customs and Border Protection. And we have made very significant progress in the last 6 months on MDA. The other thing that we're working on is really a standing structure that we're going to use within the ports to encourage port partnerships with MDA, and that's the Area Maritime Security Committees, chaired by the captain of the port. It includes all of the partners in the port from a federal, state, local, and industry level. And this is really an excellent way for us to tailor the MDA needs we have in each of the individual ports because, as you know, each port has their own unique characteristics, their own unique commerce patterns, their own unique governmental structures and industry structures. And so this is a good way to use an existing forum to work MDA issues. And really, MDA issues support the entire range of missions that any of the agencies perform in the ports. We've been working also very closely with the Department of Defense combatant commanders in how we work common operating picture issues between the maritime security agencies or Ministry of Interior agencies and the ministries of defense around the globe. And that's just a very nascent effort, something that we've identified as an area where the Coast Guard can contribute because of our relationships with Coast Guards and maritime security organizations as well as navies. That will be of great assistance, I think, to combatant commanders.
Admiral Salerno, I want to go back to something that you mentioned with respect to cruise ships. The strategy speaks of the challenge of scale when it comes to the increased size of, for example, cruise ships, but also container ships and tankers. Now that the strategy has noted it, how's the Coast Guard addressing it?
Well, when we talk about scale, we're talking about a couple of different things. One is just the physical infrastructure that's required to deal with ships of these size. The physical infrastructure in the ports is often located in close proximity to civilian populations, so that if you're dealing with hazardous materials, for example, you obviously have some vulnerabilities there. Certainly, we get involved with the port communities in siting decisions on some of those facilities and in the infrastructure decisions that are made by the local community. The size of the ships themselves, cruise ships may carry several thousand people. So there's always a potential for mass rescue operations from a safety standpoint, and they also represent potential targets from a from a terrorist standpoint. So in both avenues or areas of concern, the size of cruise ships matter quite a bit. Large tankers, we have similar concerns as the ships increase in size. Obviously, the amount of cargo they carry it goes up dramatically. So there are safety and environmental concerns associated with that. How do we address it? Well, generally through regimes, which we started talking about, the rules, the regulations, the standards, the licensing requirements for the people who operate those vessels and who work in the port environment, working through the Area Maritime Security Committees for security measures in those ports to minimize the likelihood of something going wrong or mitigating the effects should something happen.
In this segment, I want to talk about operational capabilities. Admiral Pekoske, let's talk now about several in particular. Let's start with the C2 centers. Now, I think the strategy envisages more centers. What do you have in mind there?
We don't have in mind necessarily more command and control centers. One of the challenges that we face is more is not necessarily better, but integrated, properly equipped, and properly staffed command centers is really where we're headed. And in some locations, we may have a situation where it's it's smarter operationally to have multiple command centers in a particular port for operational redundancy purposes. In other words, you don't want to literally put all of your eggs in one basket in some ports. Mm-hmm. And so our challenge there is to make sure that those multiple operation centers are well connected and have the same common operating picture.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other priorities we have, and it varies port by port, is our ability to surveil both the port areas and, importantly, the offshore areas of the port. Our overall strategy, as you know, is really a layered defense strategy, and we would certainly desire to detect and respond to any security threats the country might face as far offshore as we can. And so in some ports, we're going to look very hard at the surveillance systems and the surveillance capabilities to be able to, one, surveil inside the port, but importantly, to move those layers outside.
Mm-hmm.
Important in every single port, and important overall for all of the work we do, no matter what mission we're talking about, are the relationships we have with other entities. And these need to be relationships built on trust and relationships built on familiarity with each other's procedures, each other's culture, each other's authorities and capabilities. And so as we look at the command and control centers that we have, one of the things that we're going to be looking carefully at is ensuring that we have adequate space for interagency partners to mm-hmm. participate face-to-face inside those command centers. So those are the major things we have going forward with one important addition, and that is every single agency has a database and multiple databases. They collect information, use it for different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Represented in the port is a wealth of information, but gaining access to that information and having the information in terms that we all mutually understand is an important principle that we'd like to move forward with. So that information, for example, that the Coast Guard collects on commercial vessels, recreational vessels, mm-hmm. fishing vessels, would be in a format and accessible to agencies that have a need to know mm-hmm. For their mm-hmm. own operations and for their own authorities and capabilities.
Mm-hmm. Now, Admiral, the Coast Guard is also talking about more shore-based maritime patrol. What do you have in mind here, and how will that interface with port authorities, customs, border protection, and the Navy?
Well, the Safe Port Act mandates a minimum of 2 visits per year to every Maritime Transportation Security Act regulated facility with an approved facility security plan. And so we've added roughly 40 facility inspectors throughout the country to be able to perform those shore-based visits mm-hmm. at those MTSA facilities.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm particularly interested in your concept for the deployable specialized forces for all threats and hazards. Can you detail for us what you have in mind here and when these units will be fully stood up and where?
The units for the deployable specialized forces within the Coast Guard, the actual units, are already stood up, and those mm-hmm. units comprise our 12 maritime safety and security teams that are located throughout the country, our 8 port security units, our 3 environmental and chem-bio hazardous response teams, and our maritime security response team. And so those units are already in existence in addition to our tactical law enforcement teams.
Mm-hmm.
The concept behind the deployable operations group is to take all of those specialized teams and put them under one commander.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, if you looked at the reporting relationships for all those teams, because they were commissioned at different points in time in our history, they have a different reporting relationship depending on which team you're talking about. And so the benefit of the deployable operations group will be that all of these teams will now report to one commander.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you looked inside the Coast Guard at our deployable capability, it will be controlled by, overseen by, one force provider, which will be the deployable operations group. And so mm-hmm. we see this as a very significant step forward in being able to provide those deployable specialized forces to operational commanders, whether the operational commander is a Coast Guard commander or an interagency
mm-hmm.
Commander.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be a very significant improvement in our capability. The deployable operations group is scheduled to be commissioned on the 20th of July of this year.
Mm-hmm. Outstanding. Admiral Salerno, I have an IT-oriented question. I understand you're using service-oriented architecture, SOA, for your user-defined operational pictures. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. And, in fact, it harkens back to what Admiral Pekoske mentioned earlier in reference to the command and control centers. The services-oriented architecture, it's really in the early stages throughout the federal government and will probably take several years before we see the full effects of it. But what it allows users to do is to tap into various databases, many of which were developed independent from each other, but to tap into them using their own tools and then to present that information in a way that makes most sense and for them and provides the greatest utility for them. We are doing this at Martinsburg at our Operations System Center, which will tap into existing Coast Guard databases so that in our command centers, they will have the full use of all of the data that the Coast Guard currently collects. But we're also doing this in the MDA context. There is what we call an MDA data sharing community of interest, which is comprised of DHS, DOD, and DOT. So we're in the early stages of developing that capability in the interdepartment level.
In this segment, Admiral Bukowski, I'd like to talk a little bit about interagency partnerships. I have a general question. How far along have you gotten in the need-to-share culture?
We've made good progress in the need-to-share culture, and we just take a page from Director McConnell, who's the Director of National Intelligence, and he speaks of not just a need to share, but an obligation to provide. And you know, I think those are very good words, because as we develop information, we need to develop it with the thought at the very beginning that this is information we're going to share. And there are certain procedures that we have. For example, some default procedures would automatically characterize some information as not releasable to foreign governments. And because it's a default setting, oftentimes information that really could be shared is just by default not. And so we're taking a round turn on that to look at information with the, hey, let's make this as shareable as we possibly can as we develop it. The other thing I'd highlight for you is something I mentioned previously is that senior guidance team between the Coast Guard and Customs and Border Protection. And this is an example of one of the significant benefits of our Department of Homeland Security, wherein two components initially get together on a regular basis. It's an agreement between Commissioner Basham of CBP and Admiral Allen of the Coast Guard. And we look at ways that we can share our operational capacity, our operational capabilities. And we're doing things like joint boardings, looking at joint command centers, looking at how we can share information we jointly collect. We are developing a strategy collectively to deal with small vessels. As you know, right now, most of our security attention, at least on a multinational basis, has been focused on large vessels, 300 gross tons and above. Both Commissioner Basham and Admiral Allen have asked us to focus on the small vessel threat. And something else that we've worked very successfully with Customs and Border Protection is the recovery operations, or the resumption of trade after an incident occurs. That resumption of trade work has been very beneficial for us, not just in accomplishing trade resumption after a natural or a man-made disaster, but it also highlights capacities and capabilities we have within our organizations across the board. So all that work with Customs and Border Protection has been very much geared towards sharing capabilities, sharing information, sharing capacity for effect.
Mm. Well, last year, Admiral, when we were with Admiral Allen, you were in the middle of the interagency discussions with the FBI. Can you tell us the status of the relationship with the FBI today with regard to the maritime threats?
Well, since you met with Admiral Allen, the Maritime Operational Threat Response Plan has been signed by the President. And that Maritime Operational Threat Response Plan defined lead agency roles and networked national-level command centers. And I can tell you from my experience as the Assistant Commandant for Operations since July, we have used that Maritime Operational Threat Response Plan and its protocols to great benefit. In fact, these are not my words. These are words of others outside of the Department of Homeland Security, is that Maritime Operational Threat Response Plan really represents the gold standard with respect to interagency cooperation. Using MOTR, we have been able to identify and come to interagency agreement on how we would handle several maritime threats that have that have surfaced over the course of time. And as I've watched this develop and as I participated in those decisions, we have greatly served our country and our operational forces because we're able to take an operational situation, get interagency agreement very rapidly, and give very clear direction to our operational forces on scene so that they're not waiting on scene for a long time while we decide what the proper course of action should be.
Mm-hmm. Admiral, what's the status of your effort with FEMA to develop the mobile command centers?
Well, the effort with FEMA with mobile command centers really has two dimensions to it. The first is, as you know, the Coast Guard provided several principal federal officials for the hurricane season last year, and I expect that we'll provide some principal federal officials again this year. And so the principal federal officials that our Coast Guard flag officers would use FEMA mobile command and communications facilities in their PFO role. Mm-hmm. We are also developing a mobile communications capability on the part of the Coast Guard and developing it for Coast Guard-specific responses for which we may be contributing to the overall FEMA effort or we may be just operating independently as a Coast Guard. My experience as an operator is that whenever you conduct an operation, the one aspect that you know is going to be critical to your success is the ability to communicate effectively. And so we've placed a lot of emphasis on this, and the emphasis on equipment has been on equipment that is automatically interoperable with other equipment. So we don't buy something that becomes a Coast Guard-specific or even a DHS-specific piece of gear. We're looking to purchase communications equipment that will allow us to communicate with everybody who comes to the scene, and I think that's a significant step forward.
In this last segment, let's talk about emerging threats and challenges. Admiral Pekoske, let's talk about first the strategy which discusses and addresses waterborne IEDs, or WIBIDs, and defines them as threat vectors to move weapons, materials, people, and money. Can you give us a rundown on this threat? The attack on the coal comes to mind, obviously, and there are other examples. So the Coast Guard, as I understand it, is enhancing the countermeasures in our waters, correct?
The Coast Guard is, and other elements of the Department of Homeland Security are. And as we look at threats overall, as I mentioned earlier, we feel that we've done a pretty good job of looking at threats in the 300 gross ton size range and above. Our concern is that we have a number of vessels below that range that do present a threat to us. And I would use as an example the great number of fishing vessels, recreational vessels, smaller coastal vessels that are very predominant in our port areas. The challenge for us is a lot of people would say that you need to get situational awareness to identify the anomalies, and that's very true. You also need to have very good situational awareness to identify those who are not anomalous but represent a threat, and that's much more of a challenge. And if you think of any one of our port areas, and let's use as an example a large cruise ship going into a port, oftentimes that cruise ship is accompanied by a good number of smaller vessels around it. Mm-hmm. A cruise ship has a lot of people on board, would present a target. And it's very difficult for us right now to be able to separate off and respond to that great number of smaller vessels that mm-hmm. are around cruise ships. That's just one example. You could use any other ship that's in a port carrying a certain dangerous cargo. We also have a number of smaller vessels off our coast that conduct commerce, conduct fishing off our coast, and they could be used or a vessel looking like them mm-hmm. could represent a threat to us. And so we've identified this particular situation, and what we've chosen to do is we don't know what the answer is just yet. We're going to have a summit with small vessel operators in June, mm-hmm. Co-hosted by Customs and Border Protection and the Coast Guard, and we're going to seek their input. We're going to present the threat information to them, work through a number of workshops, and seek their input as to what is their recommendation as to how we can best address this threat going forward. We very much desire to have a give and take, a very collaborative process, an educational process, so that when we consider what our options would be, that we consider those options with the best information from industry that we can get.
Admiral Salerno, in the port security arena, can you tell us how you see the Maritime Security Risk Assessment Methodology, MSRAM, supporting the Unified Combating Maritime Terrorism, or CMT, planning?
Sure. The MSRAM is a standard risk assessment tool that it's in use Coast Guard-wide. Essentially, what it does is allow the captains of the port to gauge the risks within their areas of operation, and they come up with it's a standard formulation format, and they can prioritize the critical infrastructure, the activities that take place in their areas of responsibility, and rank order them in terms of risk. MSRAM has been developed with enough sophistication that we can now compare not only risk within an individual port, but also regionally and nationally. So it becomes a very useful tool, and that the Coast Guard can then use in the combating maritime terrorism construct for focusing our resources in areas that will buy down risk to the greatest extent. MSRAM also has utility in port security grants. If the concept behind a port security grant is to put limited amount of federal dollars in areas that can have the greatest buy down of risk, MSRAM actually helps inform that process to a very great extent.
Admiral Bukowski, I have one last question. Last autumn, I participated in the Navy's own new maritime strategy discussion at CNA, and the Coast Guard is an active participant. Naval officers are taking global warming pretty seriously in terms of security in the Arctic, for example. And I noted that your strategy addresses it. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I can. And actually, that's a great wrap-up question, because I'll go back to some comments I made at the very beginning of our discussion. The Navy's taking it very seriously. Many other partners across the U.S. interagency are taking it very seriously. Global warming represents potentially new sea routes in the Arctic. It also represents potentially new sources of oil exploration in the Arctic. And if you remember when I talked about the Coast Guard strategy for maritime safety, security, and stewardship, if you think about the range of Coast Guard missions of the Coast Guard as a safety agency, the Coast Guard as a security agency, the Coast Guard as an environmental protection agency, the Coast Guard as an agency whose responsibility is to facilitate commerce, all of those issues present themselves in the Arctic. And so we're taking a very careful look at our operations potentially in the Arctic, and this will be very much an interagency effort.
That's outstanding. Well, Admiral Bukowski and Admiral Salerno, I want to thank you very much for the time you took and your busy schedule to be with us, and thank you as well for your service to our country.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
This has been a Domestic Preparedness podcast interview. Thank you for listening.